behind my clock. There we go. And here we go on Talk Shoe.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome, Christian Israel, white nationalists, and Jew-savvy people everywhere. Pastor Eli James here. And tonight is going to be a continuation of our series on Jesus Was Not a Jew. Let me put the link in here for everybody. Because for some reason... Oh, wait a minute. Okay, sorry. my computer messed up. All right, I'm going to have to back up and restart going back to the link. And this is Jesus Was Not a Jew by Willie Martin. And put it right in the chat room right here. There it is, from AngloSaxonIsrael.com. And haven't thought about it much, but I really haven't done much on Willie Martin. It's just there's been so much else going on. I don't even recall doing, you know, maybe more than one or two shows on Willie Martin in all the years I've been on the air. And so we definitely need to be doing more with Willie Martin. And I guess it's because we've had so many live presenters on, and, you know, we were concentrating on, historically anyway, Swift and Comparay and Sheldon Emery, that Willie Martin kind of, and Arnold Kennedy, Willie Martin kind of got overlooked. So we'll have to correct that. So tonight we're going to be doing the show on Willie Martin, Christ Was Not a Jew. And this will be part one, because I'm sure we'll be doing two parts on this document here. And then from there, I would like to probably go into the Constitution and the Bible. Whether I do that here on Yahweh's Covenant People or whether I do it on the Restoration Hour, I definitely want to refute Pastor Weiland's contention that the U.S. Constitution is an anti-Christian document. First of all, the Christians who wrote the Constitution, their definition of religion was Christianity. And they considered all other theologies to be heathen theology. They did not consider them to be religion. So the word, the usage of the word religion has changed in the last 200 years. Whereas now today people think that Buddhism and Hinduism and Judaism are also religions. That's not how they used the word in the days of the revolution. Christianity was the only religion. So, and obviously Weiland doesn't know that. And I'll cover all the bases and show how America had been going through a very serious Christian revival just before the American Revolution, and it was in fact the pastors of the pastors of Christianity. I'm a bit tired. I've had a long day at work. The pastors of Christianity. There was no such thing as Judeo-Christianity in those days. They're the ones who led the revolution. They're the ones who led the troops at Lexington and Concord. The militia, that is. They led the militia at Lexington and Concord. So the crop of universalist, antinomian, so-called pastors we have today are an embarrassment. They're an embarrassment to religion, an absolute embarrassment to religion. And these are people that we need to call to account for all of the garbage they're teaching today. But in any case, we're going to talk about Christ Was Not a Jew by Willie Martin. And, okay, my page won't split again. For some reason, this happens every so often. Let me see if I can get it to split up between the two pages here. And No, it just won't do it. Son of a gun. All right, so I'm just going to have to flip between the chat room and the article as I'm reading, because it won't. I can't get a split screen out of this. It should be automatic. It really should be automatic, but it's not doing it for me. Okay, well, I wasn't. I'm not question in the chat room. What do you think of Bob Jones? I'm really not that familiar with Bob Jones. I met him once way back in 1996 in Branson, Missouri. Yeah, he used to work with Wickstrom. A lot of people used to work with Wickstrom. So doesn't mean that Wickstrom has any influence over him anymore. In fact, Wickstrom's, I think just about everybody has abandoned Wickstrom at this point. And he hasn't really been doing much from what I can see. He's just got his talk show show, and that's about it. So not too much going on with Wickstrom from what I can see. But in any case, we have a... okay, hold on. Let me try this. I think I found a way to do it. Okay. All right. Okay, I've got the article and the TalkShoe chat room on a split screen. On a split screen, where there's a will, there's a way. So let me see if I can get the whole document here without being cut off. It's always tricky to do a split screen. I think we got it now. All right, very good. All right, so Christ Was Not a Jew by Willie Martin. I don't know if he's totally stopped working with Wickstrom. Like I said, I'm not familiar with Bob Jones much at all. So, but when I did meet him in 96, you know, he was, he struck me as a sincere two-seed liner. Okay. Christ Was Not a Jew by Willie Martin, and my introductory comments here. In this essay, Willie Martin attempts to explain the problems with equating the Jewish people with Judah and Israel. In essence, he argues that a true Judahite or Israelite is a pure-blooded descendant of a particular Israelite tribe. The Jews, on the other hand, are hybrids of many races, none of whom qualify as either Judah or Israel. Since there is no such thing as a pure-blooded Jew, no Jew can count as an Israelite. The Sephardic Jews actually originated in the Edomite tribes, not among the 12 tribes. Likewise, the Ashkenazi Jews are a completely non-Israelite people who converted to Judaism in the 7th century A.D. And this is kind of topical right now because John Friend and I did a show about this, and it's been posted up on Eurofolk Radio. And, of course, David Duke and Kevin MacDonald did a show that, and they were trying, at least David Duke was trying to argue that the Jews are Israelites. But in listening to that interview, Kevin MacDonald wasn't convinced. So Kevin MacDonald wasn't convinced. So even though the title of the video was that, that Duke and MacDonald confirm that the Jews are Israelites. No, they didn't. They didn't confirm that at all. And there was actually quite a lot of doubt. In fact, the closest that Duke came to saying that the Jews are Israel was, I believe the Jews are a race. That's, he used the word, I believe. He didn't confirm anything. And for the vast majority of that interview, they kind of beat around the bush and never presented any evidence that the Khazars are, in fact, Israelites. So, that's why John Friend and I did that show to counteract the what I consider to be propaganda by David Duke. He obviously owes the Jews something because when he was in, he doesn't want to go back to prison. So the Jews have the sword of Damocles hanging over his head, and if he doesn't behave himself, they'll just send him back to prison. Okay, so here is now Willie Martin. For most Judeo-Christians who have not come to realize that their pastor, priest, minister, or whatever title they go by, are either lying or don't know that when they say Jesus was a Jew. Yet if one declares that Christ was not a Jew, brings the immediate response, of course he was a Jew. And yet, how many who thus assert that Jesus was a Jew are doing so as a result of a study of the genealogical evidence? Recently, there has been quite some discussion about the genealogical lists in Matthew and Luke. So let us study the evidence and see what turns up. Now, we did, in fact, discuss this pretty much at length in the last couple of shows. But let's see what Willie Martin has to say about the I don't know if he discusses the different genealogies in Luke and Matthew. It's been a while since I've read this. This has been on Anglo-Saxon Israel for many years. Let me bring the rest of the chatters in here. Okay. And there is no factual evidence to verify or sustain those who have accepted the traditional teachings of the Judeo-Christian Church, which proclaim Christ to be a Jew. The statement is made with the full realization that there are those who will dispute it, not because they possess evidence to the contrary, but because they would defend a doctrinal teaching, even against the truth, out of honest error, or because they have some agenda to deceive Christ's followers. Of course, that would be the Jews. The assertion that Jesus was a Jew is the result of centuries of belief based upon the teaching of the Judeo-Christian Church, whose leaders have assumed because they have known no better, or wish to continue the deception because it enhances their images and finances, from the Antichrists who have their own agenda for this falsehood to be perpetuated, that Christ must be a Jew. Just as the Judeo-Christian has been mistaken in assuming that all Israelites are Jews, so they have erred in presuming that all who are born of this line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Israel, must be, by virtue of their birth, Jews. Of course, that's nonsense too, because Abraham was not a Jew, Isaac was not a Jew, none of the Israelite brothers of Judah were Jews, and neither was Judah. He was a Judahite. He was the first Judahite. Huge difference between a Judahite and a Jew. So, of course, the Judeo-Christians don't understand this. Along with the need of recognizing that not all Israelites are Jews, in fact, few are, I would say none are, although today something, I was working on Racine Avenue near Wrigley Field today, and there appeared to be a man walking up the street north on Racine, and he looked like a normal white guy, but as he was passing by, I saw there was a clear white yarmulke on his head. They wear them toward the back rather than on the top. I don't know why they wear them toward the back. But I never would have guessed this guy was a Jew. I have a feeling that a lot of white people, confused Christians, are becoming Jews. And that's why I'm seeing so many white people, white men, wearing yarmulkes on their head. And they don't look Jewish. They don't act Jewish. There's a video by a guy who claims to be Jewish. He doesn't act Jewish at all. He's actually a Southern guy. But, you know, I could see from the video he was wearing a yarmulke. So there must be a lot of people converting to Judaism out of, out of, again, total ignorance, that they simply don't understand that the Jews aren't Israelites and have nothing to do with the Bible. But, of course, this is the message of Christian identity, and our burden is to teach our deceived brethren what's really going on. Let us look at a few passages of Scripture frequently cited to confirm the belief that Jesus was a Jew. Christ met a woman of Samaria who said to him, "How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, for the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans?" Now, before he even answers this question, let me say how I would answer this. The question is how that thou, being a Judean, which is a territorial term, askest drink of me, for the Judeans have no dealings with the Samaritans. And this was true of the Judean population as a whole, as well as of the Judahite population and the Israelite population before the Herodians took over Judea around 37 BC. It was that year that Herod invaded Judea, Jerusalem, with Mark Antony, and defeated and overthrew the kingdom of Judah, which up until that point in time was still a racially homogeneous people, although John Hyrcanus had started circumcising Idumeans way back around 121 BC. But it wasn't until Herod took over with the Romans that all hell broke loose, and then he assassinated the Judahite kings, the last surviving sons of John Hyrcanus, and he assassinated the Sanhedrin, replacing them with his Edomite crony. So if you don't know this history, if you don't know that Herod was an Edomite, not a Judahite, and that this word Jew in the New Testament is a territorial term, not a racial term, then obviously you will be confused, and that's why the Judeo-Christians are confused. So let's see what he has to say about this. She knew from his arguments that Jesus was a follower of the Jewish doctrines and one who worshipped in the synagogue. No, it wasn't Jewish doctrines. It was Mosaic doctrines. Again, here even Willie Martin is confused. You cannot confuse a Jew with a Judahite. You cannot confuse a Jew with an Israelite. In each case, a Jew is one who pretends to be an Israelite or a Judahite. And in this case here, in the days of the apostolic days, these Jews were all Edomites. There weren't any Khazar Jews yet. They didn't come until 740 AD. So we're talking Sephardic Jews, and these were Edomite Jews with a bunch of Babylonian Jews, namely the Sepharvaim, who were brought into Samaria by the Assyrians when the two nations, the southern and northern houses of Israel, were separated right after the death of Solomon. The Assyrians brought the Sepharvaim in, and they lived in Samaria. And that's where the Babylonian religion comes from. And these Sepharvaim blended in with the Edomites because the Judahites would refuse to have any dealings with Edomites or Sepharvaim or Arabs or any other people. And told them to get lost. Stay out of our affairs. We don't want you. So these Sephardic Jews are a combination of Babylonian, Sepharvaim, and Edomites. That's what they are. And that's what they were in the days of Christ. And that's why Yahshua refused to have any dealings with these, just as Ezra and Nehemiah refused to have any dealings with these people. So, and here, again, we have to be careful how we use the word Jew. We should never apply the word Jew to a pure-blooded Judahite or to a pure-blooded Israelite. We always reserve the word Jew for Edomites and Khazars. But right now, we are dealing exclusively with the Edomite version of Jew. Okay, so what else does he have to say? She marveled, she knew from his garments that Jesus was a follower of the, he should be saying, Judahite doctrines, or Mosaic doctrines would even be better, and one who worshipped in the synagogue. Yes, there were synagogues all over the place, even in Galilee, and the Sepharvaim were not present in Galilee, so the synagogues in Galilee were peopled by true Benjaminites, primarily Benjaminites, and not by Edomites, and very rarely by Judahites, because the Judahites lived down in Judah. But I'm sure there were passing Judahites who came to the synagogue in Galilee, and vice versa. But they would have avoided Samaria, just as Yahshua told in the Great Commission that he gave to the apostles, go not to the cities of the Samaritans, go rather to the scattered or lost or exiled sheep of the house of Israel. So even Jesus said, no, Avoid those Samaritans. You're not supposed to have anything to do with those Samaritans. Just go right on by, go through Samaria and go to Galilee, and then proceed on to the scattered tribes of Israel in the Greco-Roman world. And then he says, she marveled that he would ask her for anything, for the strictly religious Jew refused to deal with her people. Now her perception, obviously this lady would not have known or understood that Herod had empowered his Edomite cronies to take over the Sanhedrin, and she may not have known that Herod and the Herodians, that is the Pharisees, who were the ruling sect at the time, thanks to the Roman army, because the Roman army had empowered Herod and his cronies, she would have mistaken them for Judahites, so she wouldn't have known the difference. However, Yahshua didn't know the difference, and he would not have addressed this woman were she not an Israelite. Contrast this to the episode in Matthew 15 where the Canaanite woman comes up to him and she accosts him. He does not address her, and the apostles even say, what are you doing talking with this Canaanite woman? We don't talk with Canaanites. Yet he addressed this woman because she was an Israelite. And also the Syrophoenician woman, I think in Mark chapter 4, would have to be the same as she, as the Canaanite woman, because she also is spoken of as being a non-Israelite. So that story in Mark corresponds to Matthew chapter 15. But this story here, John 4:9, he addresses her, and he strikes up a conversation with her. He would not have done this were she not an Israelite. Okay, so she marveled that he would ask her for anything. That was not a racial reason, but a religious one. And Jesus ignored the prejudice of his time. Well, no, he didn't. See, Willie Martin doesn't even get it, because he confuses the definition of the word Jew. You cannot use the word Jew for anything but a half-breed imposter. Okay, the Jews are all imposters, whether they're Sephardic or Ashkenazic, doesn't matter, they're imposters, pretending to be Israelites. And so we shouldn't apply the word that the imposters use to call themselves to the true Judahites. In the Old Testament, the Judahites were called Yehudi, and they were not Judeans. They were Yehudi. The name Judean came about as a result of mixing the nation of Judah and Idumea together. That's where the term Judea comes from. And in the New Testament, it always means Judean unless the context refers specifically to Israelites or Judahites of the tribe of that tribe of Israel. So again, just like the word Gentile, you have to read the context of the passage very carefully to determine whether you're speaking of Judeans in both your two main genomes, the Judahites and the Edomites, or whether it's speaking specifically of Edomites or specifically of Judahites. See, from the context, you can usually tell. So between the Jews and the Galileans was an even greater antipathy than usual. Yeah, because the Pharisees were the ruling clique in Judea, and they hated true Israelites. See, they hate the people they're impersonating. And so the Galileans were probably not hip to this. And maybe most Judahites weren't hip to it, although Josephus clearly tells us that the women of Judah demonstrated against Herod on a regular basis because they knew he was not a Judahite. They knew he was an Edomite, and they protested almost on a daily basis, asking the Romans to throw him out. They didn't want him. He didn't deserve to be the leader of Jerusalem or Judea because he was the wrong race. He was a totally different people, namely the Edomites. Christ, as we learn, was mistaken by this woman to be a Jew. Well, a Judean. And as I said, she probably didn't know that that there were Edomites pretending to be Judahites. So, but he addressed her. So, because he knew that she was an Israelite. At another time, he marveled when he beheld an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. And I think that was an Ethiopian Jew, but the word Judahite. See, you got me doing it, Willie. Okay. He was an Ethiopian, which means sunburnt faces. Only white people get sunburnt faces, so he was not a black. Do we need to be told that he knew how guileful they were? Well, certainly the Jews were. And we find the same, we have the same problem today, that white people pick up Jewish habits and they become full of guile when they become like Jews. He continues, instances are numerous throughout the New Testament and even today where the racial differences come to the surface. And on the Jewish part, now of course modern Jews is a totally different story because very few white Israelites really associate with Jews at all, except usually in business. But as I said, there is this trend now of white people, Christians, wanting to become Jews. And we in Identity are always being accused of wanting to be Jews. I said, no, that's the last thing we want to be is Jews. We're Israelites. There's a difference. But most Judeo-Christians don't understand this at all. But it's our job. We're going to teach the white race the difference between a Jew and an Israelite, if it's the last thing we ever do. We're not going to stop teaching this message because it is sinking in, folks. There's more and more people coming around to Identity, seeing it from our perspective. John Friend has been a good friend to Identity in helping us promote this idea, and he has a pretty much secular audience. So that's good, and Aaron Dakins has been helping us promote this message. And people are beginning to speak our language. You can see more and more websites where the pastors and speakers are using Yahweh and Yahshua. This is unprecedented. So for the 17 years that Pastor Dan and I have been on the air, we've been harping and harping and harping on the sacred names, and people are beginning to pick them up. Of course, they're not giving us any credit for it because we're persona non grata. Nobody knows us or nobody wants to admit to knowing us, but somehow they're beginning to warm up to the sacred names. In any case, let's continue here. And he said, after talking about the guileful or guileless, that's what he was. He was an Israelite in whom there is no guile, and that's how we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be guileless. Instances, and be therefore wise as serpents, yet it says gentle in your KJV. The correct translation is guileless. Be therefore wise as serpents, yet guileless as doves. You're not supposed to have any evil intent. That's not supposed to be in your mind at any time. You're not supposed to be going around wanting to steal from people or trick people, or, you know, badmouth people. You're not supposed to have any guile in your heart. And, of course, Yahshua can tell if you do or not. So he beheld that Ethiopian and said, okay, this Israelite has no guile. He was able to see right into his soul and determine that he had no guile. Do we need to be told that he knew how guileful they were? Yeah, well, if they were Jews, right? Instances are numerous throughout the New Testament and even today where the racial differences come to the surface. And on the Jewish part, all this is corroborated by the Talmud itself, which records a racial taboo against the peoples of the North. Surely it is a monstrous perversion of the truth, this claim that Christ was a Jew, that is now being used by Jews and modern Judeo-Christians, and the incredible damage of Christ's mission to all the world. A recent historian said, whoever makes the assertion that Christ was a Jew is either ignorant or insincere. Ignorant when he confesses race and religion, insincere when he knows the history of Galilee, and partly conceals, partly distorts the very entangled facts in favor of his religious prejudices, or it may be to curry favor with the Jews. There's a lot of curry out there. Judeo-Christianity is sprinkled with a lot of curry. That quotation from Houston Stuart Chamberlain, Foundations of the 19th Century, page 211. Now, Mr. Chamberlain had a good head on his shoulders. But you see, this idea, the fact is that the Christian world did not regard the Jews as God's chosen people, not until the 20th century. All Christians knew up until the very end of the 19th century that Jews were evil. If they gave the Jews credit for being of the tribe of Judah, they considered them to be apostates, and we should have absolutely nothing to do with them. No Christian, up until the 20th century, ever gave the Jews credit for being God's chosen people. That lie was perpetuated and started by Cyrus I. Schofield under the auspices of the Rothschilds, Samuel Untermeyer being the Rothschild agent and C.I. Schofield's handler. He basically paid Schofield to write the notations, and I'd say most of those notations weren't even written by Schofield. They were simply fed to him by Untermeyer, and then C.I. Schofield was given the credit for it. And even later versions after Schofield died, the Oxford University Press just kept on adding more and more stuff to make us believe that the Jews are the Israelites. Because no Christian in his or her right mind up until the 20th century, until the Schofield deception, considered the Jews to be God's chosen people, would never give them that much credit, would have little or nothing to do with them except trade. So if you wanted to go to a pawn shop, you went to the Jew ghetto, right? And those ghettos had to be locked up at night so the Jews couldn't get out. Christians wanted nothing to do with Jews except they had commercial interchange with them. That's about it. And shameful to be seen with a Jew unless you had some sort of business there. So publicly or socially, Jews and Christians never interacted, absolutely never. It was unheard of. And so Judeo-Christians today don't even know this. They don't know anything about history. That's why they believe that this idea has existed for the last 2,000 years. It hasn't. Okay. So he says, if it was part of a divine wisdom that he appeared in the midst of Judaism, the uncongenial background must be the explanation, therefore, by way of contrast to his divinity. He came in the midst of Jewry at that time in history because he knew they would attempt to steal the birthright from its true heirs and would almost deceive the entire world. No, they have deceived the entire world, except for a few hundred thousand of CI people and some BI people. Of course, officially, British Israel teaches that the Jews are Judah. And, if you heard my interview with Pastor Alan Campbell on Sunday, he denies that, and it's only the official position of British Israel World Federation. My understanding is most people, most CI people or BI people in Britain do not agree with that statement and do not consider the Jews to be Judah. So, but there's actually a lot more to this. Let's see what else he has to say. This is the reason for his statement, if I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin, but now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. John 15:22-25. The problem here is that the Jews had convinced many Judahites that Jesus was an imposter. This is made very clear in the book of Acts, where Peter addresses the assembled Israelites. He addresses them as, quote, men of Israel, unquote. These people were not Jews. They were Judeans. And they were so-called Gentiles, that is, the Israelites of the dispersion, because they had come from all over the place. They had come from Babylon, where there were still Judahites that had not converted to Judaism, were not practicing Babylonian religion. They had come from Mesopotamia. They had come from Egypt, from Alexandria. They had come from all over the place. This is actually the fulfillment of the prophecy in Genesis 15, 18 to 21, where it says that these people would all come together, and it's talking about the regathering of the 12 tribes in and around Jerusalem. It's not the Jews that have been regathered. It was these 12 tribes that came together, all assembled in Jerusalem for the Feast of Pentecost, which would have been 33 A.D., right after the crucifixion. Right after the crucifixion, something had drawn all of these Israelites, and most of them would have come annually anyhow if they could do it. But I'm sure they had heard rumors that the Messiah had come, so that there was a large influx of Israelites from all over the Greco-Roman world. And none of them were Jews, because the Jews are not Israelites, and they would have had no interest. Most Jews at that time, that is, Edomites and Sepharvaim, would have had no interest in attending Pentecost and honoring Messiah, would have had no interest. And in fact, most of them would have not even been aware of the prophecies. Only the Israelites would have been aware of the prophecies. So let's continue. Guest 8, was there a Jericho? Yes, there was. In fact, I posted a video on Eurofolk Radio about the archaeological evidence for all of these biblical places, and they did find Jericho, and it was, the walls did collapse, and there was only one section of a wall remaining that was kind of underground, like a berm wall, and that was the only thing left, and it was burned. So there was all kinds of evidence. I think they even found coins showing that it was Jericho. So yeah, I advise, go ahead and watch that video, Archaeological Proof of Biblical Israel. Really, it's about a 1.5 hour presentation. It's very, very good. It just destroys all the people who are saying the Bible, it can't be proven historically. It most definitely can. So, of course, all these secular people have no interest in real history. They just want to poo-poo the Bible. And many of these people are Jews or people that have been deceived by Jews. See, the Jews promote Judeo-atheism, too. They try to turn white people into atheists so they'll lose interest in the Bible. And, of course, this drives them away from their only true source of salvation, namely Yahshua Messiah. If you believe the Bible is a Jewish book and you believe Jesus was a Jew, well, then, you know, and if you don't like Jews, then you'll have no interest in the Bible because you falsely believe those two lies. It's very clever. These Jews are very clever. So let's continue. He does not belong to the Jewish people. Thank you very much. Two things these earliest Christians did, just as many of us might have done, in order to articulate this new religion with their own personal and historic past. First, they appealed to the, quote, Jewish, that is, Israelite mosaic. Now, that's good. But actually, I think that's my, he puts Jewish in quotation marks. And I put in brackets, Israelite Mosaic Messiah tradition. And of course, only the Israelites would have had this tradition the Edomites were really pretty new to this. Even if they were aware of it, they wouldn't have cared because the Messiah wouldn't have been from their breed, from their Edomite Sepharvaic race or breed, because they're not a race. Breed is the best word. Naturally enough, since they were either Jews or Judaized, very good. So they were either Edomite Jews or they were Judaized Judahites. Second, they went back to the Old Testament prophecies. They did not have the Bible to read and study as we do. And of course, the verbal tradition would have been kept alive by them. Obviously, Joseph was aware of the verbal tradition. He was aware that and most of the people, even the Parthians were aware that, you know, they had to be aware of Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy. And that's why the Parthians came to Jerusalem when they did. So there would have been a buzz. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? There would have been a buzz that the Messiah is due any day now. But of course, the Edomite Jews would have cared less about that. They were busy establishing their dominance, as Jews always do, over the local people with their money lending, with their lies, with their pretensions, with their deceit, etc. So he continues. So first, he appealed, or they appealed, to the Israelite Mosaic Messiah tradition, natural enough, since they were either Jews or Judaized Judahites. Second, they went back to Old Testament prophecies. They did not have the Bible, just as a Greek might have gone back to Greek prophecies had he been born in Greece. Now, here again, it's a bit more complicated than this, because there's no doubt that Yahshua and the apostles used the Greek Septuagint as their source text for quotations from the Old Testament. And many, many scholars have pointed this out. The vast majority of quotations from the Old Testament agree better with the Septuagint than with the Masoretic text. Of course, the Masoretic text is the Jewish, it is the Hebrew version that the Jews had possession of and kept possession of after the temple was destroyed. And the Jews heavily redacted that version and removed it. They actually redacted it so they could remove all the passages, or many of the passages, which refer to the coming of the Messiah, because they wanted people to believe that Jesus was not the Messiah. That's why they redacted it so badly. Therefore, the Septuagint contains about 25% more information than the Masoretic text. And all scholars know this. But most of the people who say the King James Version is inerrant are unaware of this fact. Namely, that the New Testament writers, all four gospel writers, Paul, all of them, and Yahshua himself, when they quoted the Old Testament, they were quoting from the Greek Septuagint. Now, of course, the Hebrew scriptures were around, but the Pharisees controlled the temple. So the Pharisees wouldn't let anybody but their own, or, you know, officials of state or other Edomites into the temple. They would allow John the Baptist's father, because he was of the courses, but they were simply temple servants. They did upkeep. They made repairs. They did janitorial work, etc., etc. But it was the Pharisees who controlled the temple, and therefore they are the ones who had access to the Hebrew scriptures. And it's even reported that Herod had all of the genealogical records of the Judahites destroyed, because those records proved that he was not a Judahite. This is what was going on. This was going on in those days. And of course, your Judeo-Christian minister is not going to say a word about any of this stuff because they want you to believe, and of course the Jews want you to believe, that they're descendants of the tribe of Judah. They are not. Let's continue. Testimony to the advent of Christ, the claims of the Antichrists and their pulpits, notwithstanding, I like to call them pulpit bastards, but the pulpit parrots, pulpit parrots, that's a good term, is not limited to the New Testament writers nor even to the church fathers, as anyone may find by consulting the following names and authorities. And I would simply say this, that the early church fathers knew the difference between a Jew and a Judahite. They hated Jews. The early church fathers knew who was persecuting them, just as James, John, Peter, Paul, and all the rest knew who was persecuting them. It wasn't their own people. Although their own people were part of the mob very often, they knew it was these Edomites who were persecuting them. First, Flavius Josephus, a Roman governor of Galilee, the best known of the ancient Judahite historians. See, even here, Willie Martin, he uses the word Jew incorrectly. You shouldn't call a Judahite a Jew. Let's keep the distinction clear. A Jew is someone who's pretending. He's an Edomite or a Khazar pretending to be an Israelite. That's what a Jew is. So if he would simply stick with proper terminology, the best known of the ancient Judahite historians, there would be no confusion. Second, Tacitus, Roman historian. Third, Pliny the Younger, Roman historian. Fourth, Suetonius, Roman historian. Fifth, Lucian, Greek essayist. The testimony of these and all like them is all the more weighty because it is unwilling or even hostile. They saw the amazing spread of Christianity like a pestilence, as they called it. We're a pestilence today, right? Aren't we an identity hated by everybody, even other Christians? Not just by the Jews, and by secularists too. Everybody hates us, just as the early Christians were hated. That's because we're bringing real Christianity back. Like a pestilence, as one of them put it, sweeping away every vestige of their native Greco-Roman religion. Praise Yahweh for that. Naturally, they were disturbed and antagonistic, the more so because of the agitation of the Jews. Now here, there's a contradiction here. There's obviously, again, two different genomes at work here, because the Christians were the Judahites who had converted from the Mosaic law, and it really wasn't much of a conversion. All that was done away with was the sacrificial law, called works of the law in the writings of Paul. That's all that was done away with, was the sacrificial law. But they could tell the difference between a Christian and a Jew, because the Christians didn't practice usury. And the Christians would die for their faith where the Jews bribed their way out of things, or into things, or around things, or under things. They were bankers and moneylenders and agitators. And it was finally Justinian who evicted the Jews. The Christians had no influence in the court, the Roman court, none whatsoever. So who was it in the court? It was Jews, not Judahites. It was Jews who were agitating in the Roman court. So once you have this proper distinction between Jews and Judahites, all of this becomes clear. Among moderns, Professor S. M. Woodbridge, the following comments upon Christ may be cited. And I just looked at the clock here. We only have 10 minutes to go, so we're definitely going to do at least one more episode of this, because I can see Willie Martin is not clear. He uses the wrong terminology, and we can't be applying the word Jew to Judahites or Israelites. We just can't do that. Let the Jews call themselves what they will. We will not call our people by that name. testimony of these and all like them is more weighty because it is unwilling or even hostile. Absolutely, you know. And this testimony proves that Jesus was a historical figure. Thomas Carlyle, quote, "Jesus of Nazareth is our divinest symbol. Higher has human thought and not yet reached. A symbol of quite perennial infinite character." Okay. J.J. Rousseau, "For men to invent such a sublime character would make the inventors more wonderful than the being they portray. Who could have made this stuff up?" And the fact is that all four Gospels totally agree. Not in every detail, because whenever, let's put it this way. If you have four different witnesses to an automobile accident, and each one standing on a different corner, each one's going to have a different perspective. So their narrative is not going to be exactly the same, but neither will it contradict the other three narratives unless they're lying. And that's why you have these minor differences between the four Gospels. But these Gospels never contradict each other. They just provide different information because it's like four different people standing on the four different corners of the intersection where the crash took place. And we did an analysis of the Gospel of Luke in December, in the middle of December, proving that every detail in the Gospel of Luke was 100% historically accurate. 100% historically accurate. And all the doubts that have been cast upon the Gospel of Luke are just faulty research by people who don't want to believe in the Bible. Goethe, probably the greatest poet who ever lived. If you can read German and you can read his poetry in its original language versus the, how should I put it, difficult attempts to translate these poems into English, you simply do not capture the Zeitgeist or the Waldgeist, the spirit of the forest that the German people had, because they were part of the forest. The forest was part of them. The Knecht, the knight. They were people of the earth, not like Jews, who are people of the high-rises and the cities. So Goethe and most German poetry from this era reflects this Waldgeist, this spirit of nature, this spirit and reverence for nature that no Jew has ever had. No Jew has ever had. Goethe, and of course this is a translation, but this is not poetry, this is simply a statement. "I esteem the Gospels to be thoroughly genuine, for there shines forth from them a reflected splendor of sublimity proceeding from the person of Christ, of so divine a kind as only the divine could ever have manifested upon earth." See, no Jew would ever made a statement like that. Fichte, "There is no man of sense who will not bow before this astonishing phenomenon." Well, I guess the Jews must have no sense. J.P. Richter, "The life of Christ concerns him who, being the holiest among the mighty, lifted with his pierced hands empires off their hinges, turned the stream of centuries out of its course, and still governs the ages." Well, yes, but kind of from afar, from within the scenes is better, not behind the scenes, from within the scenes, because spirit is all around us. Napoleon. This one blew my mind. "Jesus Christ was not a man. There is between him and all others the distance of infinity. Conceive Caesar ruling the empire from the depths of his mausoleum." "Yet for Christ there are millions who would die." No Jews, however. Then it is pointed out that Pilate wrote a title over the cross. Ah, here we go. he does address this issue. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. This is seized upon by those who would make Jesus out as a Jew racially to confirm their declaration that he was a Jew. But would the fact that he was King of the Jews necessarily make him a Jew? Well, here's the problem. Again, he doesn't use the word Jew carefully enough. He's got to distinguish between Jews and Judahites. The inscription said King of Judea. And the only title that Yahshua would ever accept is King of Israel. There's a huge difference between being the king of a racially homogeneous people such as Israel versus a motley bunch like the Judeans of Judea, with all kinds of Edomite Jews inhabiting the land. So here, I didn't realize that Willie Martin was still using this sloppy terminology, but we'll clarify this as we go along. But of course, his argument here is that there's a difference between Jews and real Israelites. That's very clear. But his use of the term Jew is very confusing and sloppy. King George VI, who once sat upon the throne of Great Britain, was also king of India. But was he by virtue of that fact an Indian? Of course not. History amply proves many times that the king of a people need not necessarily be of the same race. Scripture declares that the kingly line would be of the house of David, for God made a covenant with David promising the perpetuity of his throne. If Jesus was king of the Jews, he must then of necessity be of the house of David, or king of Judah. Use the proper word. If Jesus was the king of Judah, and, of course, by extension, Israel, he must then of necessity be of the house of David, for it was through this house that the fulfillment of the promise of the coming king was to be made. The question, therefore, resolves itself into this. If Jesus was a Jew, that is, a half-breed or a full-blooded Edomite, then the house of David is Jewish. Of course, it's not. There's no Edomites in the line of David. And thus it becomes necessary to determine the racial characteristics of the house of David in order to secure the answer to the question of whether Jesus was a Jew or not. That Jesus was of the house of David is taught in the Old Testament and confirmed in the Gospels. Let us therefore proceed to establish the nationality of Jesus by establishing the nationality of the house of David. And there's less than 2 minutes left here, so let's just go into this next paragraph. It is clear in Scripture that a people and race were selected through whom, that is a race, not a motley breed, a race, not a motley breed, were selected through whom, according to the promise, the coming one who was to be the Savior, Jesus Christ the King, would come. It was the line of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob Israel. The descendants of Abraham, however, even through Isaac and Jacob, are represented in different branches of the human race. No. The Adamic race. The Adamic race. Wow, I had never realized that Willie Martin was so sloppy in his thinking on this. The Turk and the Arab are descendants of Abraham, but not through Jacob. The Turks are not descendants of Abraham. The Arabs are, however, because they are descended from, but no more, because the Arabs, ever since Islam, have race mixed to the hilt. But neither, of course, the Turks or Arabs are descended through Jacob. It is through the 12 sons of Jacob that the promise of the coming one was to be fulfilled. One son of the 12 was selected for this purpose. Amen. And that was Judah. All right, folks. I almost have to apologize for Willie Martin. He's so off on a lot of these statements because he confuses the word Jew with Judah. You can't do that. There's no such thing as a Judahite Jew. There's no such thing as an Israelite Jew. That's the bottom line. They're two different genomes entirely. That's tonight's message. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. More of this. We'll definitely conclude this next time, and we'll get very clear on what a Jew is and what a Jew isn't. All right, thanks a lot. See you next time. Yahweh bless. Yahweh bless you, saints.
Call recording has been completed.